it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
A snarl in the woods. Ancient forest spirits nip at his heels. He can't outrun a force of nature on foot. He needs an instant power machine built for the wild. The only escape is in the Toyota BZ Woodland. Off-road handling, all-electric power. Leave evil in the dust. John Cho stars in Camping. Face the wild. Test drive Toyota's new all-electric family at your local dealer. Toyota, let's go places.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown,
the latest on the two-tone blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. Hey, folks, listen. Let me tell you something. We got a show today where we might just call this Shark Week because we're about to go deep. And, you know, the shark, it swims as deep as any fish in the ocean. And that's what we're about to do right now because we're going to bring a guy. I'm going to call him a shark because, you know, he's in here on social media slaying people and giving them the education. And he's always a guy that I've always supported and enjoy interacting with. And that's Charles Barn from Barn Scouting. We got Connor Newt over here making it happen. We got Chris Sanders coming in later. Folks, this is a packed show, and without no further ado, I'm going to bring my guy in. Charles, what's good with you, man?
It's an absolute voucher, and I speak for a lot of people. What you bring to the beat, what you bring to the culture, the way that you're in communion with a lot of people in the city, we definitely we love you, man. That's all I want to say, man.
Hey, man, you know what? I love this city, and I love you guys, man. I love what we get to do, the interaction. It's all that. Sometimes it could be frustrating, but, you know, it's dope, though. It's fun to be able to talk shop. And I think we got to remember that at the end of the day, this is a game that we're talking about. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so you got to have fun with it. And so that's what we do. And, you know, Mr. Clairvoyant himself, Charles Barnes, it's always fun talking shop with you. And I know – you know, you had a comment the other day. You know, you talked about Jason Garrett. And it was crazy because it's very interesting how great minds tend to think alike. Because while all these people were laughing at Jason Garrett, I'm sitting here like, hey, man, North Turner, Ernie Zampezi, down the line to Don Coryell, and having played for North Turner, this is a guy who blends run heavy with play action, air Coryell, deep vertical pass concepts. It's perfect for Cam Ward. So this whole concept is not a laughable one. I think he's a valid candidate. We'll get into that a little bit later. I know you have some guys you wanted to discuss, so I'm going to turn the floor over to you.
Yeah, no problem. And just to touch on the Jason Garrett thing, it's not like we have to sign him as the head coach. And, you know, he has a lot of information. He's like one of the godfathers of the air Coryell. So if the Titans have any type of questions, it's not just call him up and get information from him, right? We're going to do justice by him and get his name out there as a head coach candidate as well. So just wanted to touch on that. But the two guys that I got are a coaching tree, and then another guy is – we're going to start this off with Matt Nagy, mm-hmm. right? That Chiefs – those Chiefs guys. And I think when you look at those guys, whether it be Matt Nagy or Steve Spagnuolo – this has happened all throughout the history of the NFL, right? Successful franchises being kind of drained, kind of being siphoned to get their brain trust, right? So you've seen it with the Patriots. You've seen it with the Giants. You've seen it with the Ravens. Other coaching staffs and organizations are going to want the Matt Nagys, the Steve Spagnuolos, just to get information from them. So I think that people who are alarmed by, we don't want Nagy. You got to understand, this guy had a raw deal with the Bears, if you ask me. He was 34-31. He was able to get the most out of Mitch Trubisky. And I think that he brings the most experienced staff because of that. I mean, because of what he went through. Most of the coaches that you're going to bring in that's first time or just didn't go through it, he's going to have all the answers to that because he went through it. So you look at some of the people that he could bring in as OC, like off the rip is Doug Peterson. I mean, how many other OC candidates has a Super Bowl under their belt? Not many. So he's just going to – and then with Spags, it's the same deal, right? He's going to bring in very similar people from that coaching tree. And they've been through the playoff battles. They've gone through the tough runs. It's just it's a similar situation like what people did with the Patriots, trying to get guys that have been through it, have won championships, and just kind of have that experience to bounce off of. And then we want to talk about Mike McDaniel, right? So Mike McDaniel is a guy that obviously been in Miami, didn't go the best ways in some situations. As you know, TD, I go through the roster projections with the Dolphins, and that team was really scheduled to be like a top five pick type of team, if not number one, before the season started. And they started off 1-6, so they were on that trajectory. And then what him and defensive coordinator Anthony Weaver was able to do to salvage that season, that just shows the ability that he's learning on the go. He's still a young coach, in my opinion. He's in Nashville now. And I think that he's the type of head coach where you might hire him early and then kind of grow with him, because he still has some things to learn.
Yeah.
His personality is an acquired taste. Some people might dig it. Some people might not. So it's really going to come down to that. His play style for me, like the types of teams he fields, is kind of finesse. But early in his football career, he's been kind of like a guy that has been a savant where in terms of the run game and matching the motions to, you know, have leverage and identify things. So, you know, I just think he's one of those guys you get in early, 2 or 3 years down the road, as he develops and learns a little bit with the locker room thing. Not everybody's going to dig it. I think he could be one of those guys that can develop into a top-tier head coach.
Okay, multiple things I want to go back on. We're going to pause it there before we move on to Spagnuolo, right? Mike McDaniel is fresh since you just spoke about that, so I want to get into what you said. How do you think, because we know what Mike Borgonzi said, right? He said, you know, you don't have to be a leader like with the strong jaw, you know, the locked chin and that type of stuff, but you have to be someone who's not afraid to hold people accountable. But you also have to be someone who's not going to run from conflict. What are your thoughts on Mike McDaniel from that perspective?
Man, from the things that I've seen, he's him. You know, his personality is very free-flowing. He's going to be a player's coach, but I don't think necessarily he's that stern, demanding type. But I do think that he can develop into that, right? Mm. It's all about, like, he's been on the job for how many ever years, and he's had his peaks, he's had his valleys, but he's versatile enough to be able to tap into what needs to be done. And my example was starting off the year, 1-6, and being able to still have a season and galvanize a season and just kind of save it in a perspective where they were almost, you know, biting for a playoff spot. So he's able to do it his own way. So that's just what I mean. Like, he's not going to come in here just barking out orders, but he can connect in a different way. And I just think if he finds his way and is not too comical, I think he'll do fine.
DC-wise, Raheem Morris, Anthony Weaver.
Yep.
What are your thoughts? Or how? What would you think? I don't know how that pairing would be because they're so polar opposites. But Jim Schwartz.
Mm. Jim Schwartz with Mike McDaniel?
Yeah.
Mm. I think it would be great, because I think you can balance out good cop, bad cop type of deal.
It is amazing how like we are thinking this.
Yeah.
That's literally was in my mind. Good cop, bad cop. Exactly. That's funny you say that.
Yeah. Because I mean, as you know, you've gone through the ranks of playing football and how it goes. A lot of people don't know that you are around your position coaches, and this is kind of pivoting off of something else we might talk about later, but you're around your position coaches more than the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously DC, depending on their strength of the ball, you're around those people more, and your head coach is like the figurehead. He's the guy that's leading the meetings. He's going to give the rah-rah speech, but you're around the staff more than the actual head coach. So even if Mike McDaniel is on the more laid back side, if you have a DC or a linebackers coach or whatever your position is, if they're able to be that stern commanding type, it just balances itself out.
Yeah, no, that's a great observation there. You mentioned something that also we shared a brain on emotions, right?
And yeah.
I remember, who was it? I don't remember who those. Tim Kelly, mm-hmm. talking to him about the way Mike McDaniel would use the motion, like motion Tyreek Hill into his route. And it's like, how the heck, he's already dumb fast, but then you got him motioning into, so he got the momentum, almost like an Arena League concept. He wasn't going forward, but still. And then the motions that they were used to, and the misdirection with Devin A. Shane, and you know, back when they had Raheem Mostert. These guys were all fast. You talk about Jaylen Waddle. It's a track team, 4x1, a legit 4x1.
For sure.
Do you think he could be successful? Because this Titans team, they might have a 4x mile type of relay team. They don't have the speed that he had in Miami.
Right. Yeah, it's just, I mean, I was talking to someone about this, I think a couple of days ago, about this team in general, they're like a blank canvas. So whoever they need to get, you know, to make a certain type of team, they can make any type of team they want to. Right now they're in the infancy stages of all of that. So a connecting thing, and I know this is probably another conversation later, but like you get someone like Mike McDaniel, Deebo Samuel is a free agent. So you get him, I've seen that they're close. So you can definitely bring that style to Nashville. As I think I've tweeted recently, the only reservation I would have with that was the pass game. The run game is solid. The pass game has had a little bit of college-esque simplified, and that may be because of the quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, Cam Ward has a much higher upside than Tua.
Yeah.
Obviously, Tua was able to put up numbers. Just imagine Cam Ward in that type of offense and pushing the ball downfield with the right personnel, of course.
No doubt about it. And then just the shift to Matt Nagy, he's clearly the favorite. Again, Mike McDaniel, Wednesday, he was in the building. They also had a virtual with Arthur Smith on Wednesday. We'll see how those things go. Matt Nagy, though, he's the favorite, and you mentioned him. You mentioned being able to pull Doug Peterson. We opened it up with Jason Garrett and his Don Coryell references. Well, guess what? Matt Nagy has ties to that also. But here's the thing that's really interesting about Matt Nagy. When you look at his college career, he played at Delaware, and that wing T. So obviously he's well-versed in the misdirection and all that crazy stuff. But then you also look at it, he played in the Arena League. And he's incorporated some of those concepts, right? When he was with the Bears, you saw where, you know, they had all types of different formations and linemen lining up out wide, and they're running screens off of that, and he's a bodyguard. What do you think of the creativity aspect of a Matt Nagy? You think that's something that's just underrated, not really being talked about?
Yeah. That first year, I mean, just from afar, I don't know about anybody else, that 2018 Bears team was fun to watch. Yeah. It's like one of the teams that just sticks in your memory for the diversification of the offense, then obviously Vic Fangio and that defense. But, yeah, 100%. It's been reported that he may not want to call plays, but obviously he'll be in the room suggesting things. And I think that's 100% going to be something that's implemented. Throughout the years, some of that stuff had to die down because of the regression of Mitch Trubisky and then the carousel of quarterbacks coming in. But he's very underrated in that aspect, underrated as a leader, in my opinion. And then his ability just to connect. You know, he's one of the more tenured coaches that the Titans are going to interview, and that's going to be able to pull a strong staff. And with that, with all those strong minds, with playoff experience, I mean, that's very important.
Yeah, it is important. And that's something that Chad Brinker, I know in talking to him, he always says, man, we have 100 years of front office experience. That's what he'll always tell me between himself, Dave Ziegler, Big Reg McKenzie, obviously Borgonzi. And that's something that you rely upon, right? Experience. So I do think that would be pretty intriguing. I mean, a few names, like you look at John DeFilippo, you know, that might be a guy he could bring in as a quarterback's coach. Yep. I will say this. I saw firsthand him working with Carson Wentz. And I know Carson – now you say Carson Wentz, and it's like, blah. But 2016, mm-hmm. they traded Sam Bradford. I watched them get this guy ready to start and play as a rookie. Yep. You're talking about like that. Yep. You know, and then ascend to one of the best players in the league in 2017. So, DeFilippo, I saw you've mentioned Press Taylor, also, mm-hmm. who was DeFilippo's assistant.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, Philly Special, mm-hmm. you know who brought that to the Eagles?
Tell the people.
Press Taylor. He brought that to the Eagles. So, you know, you're just looking at a lot of access to different names, and that's something when you're under that Andy Reid tree, which in my opinion might be the – I don't know, McVay's, that's sexy.
Mm-hmm.
But Andy Reid's tree is probably one of the best in the league. So I do like that. A part of that tree is Steve Spagnuolo. I know you wanted to touch on him, so let's get on that before we go to the break.
Yeah, so just Steve Spagnuolo coming from the Giants, obviously winning Super Bowls there, and then coming to the Chiefs. All those, just the wealth of knowledge. You look at the teams that's in the playoffs right now, you see that there's a strong defensive presence. You know, you obviously people are going to talk about the offensive savants like McVay and Ben Johnson, but defense is there too. And, you know, Spagnuolo, in terms of a leader and leading the locker room, that's to be, you know, judged and talked about. But in terms of just having that, once again, the brain trust, the experience of having a defense that's seen so many offenses, I just think that's invaluable. I think that they might share similar offensive staff, so that's why I had them branched together. So it could be Peterson, Eric Bieniemy if he's let off this contract. Mike Kafka's free now. You know, you have guys like Joe Blaymeyer and David Girardi that's quarterback coach and pass game coordinator for the Chiefs right now. So some names that the audience can do some research on. But they'll share similar offensive philosophies, in my opinion. But as far as that defense, you just have to pay attention to what failed coaches have to say and then what, you know, people are looking for. They're going to always talk about the failed coaches. They're going to talk about, oh, I should have delegated more. Oh, I wish I had more experience, or I should have did this and that. And you have it right here in front of you, just a wealth of knowledge of playoff battles and that you can always stem from. People talk about Bill Belichick all the time. And Tom Brady, how he talks about Bill Belichick and his Rolodex of, oh, I seen that offense back in 2003 versus the Carolina Panthers, and he's able to just go back and then build off of that. This league is cyclical. So years from now, having that Rolodex of experience will pay off if you chose to go that route.
Yeah, and a great example of the cyclical nature of this league, you look at 2019, Titans-Ravens. Right, mm-hmm. Greg Roman was the Ravens coordinator. Dean Pease was the Titans coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
All Dean Pease did, and it was funny because I did it too on Whiteboard Wednesday, and it ended up matching up, being a very similar game plan to what they did. All he did was go back to 2012 when Greg Roman was the 49ers coordinator with Colin Kaepernick, and Dean Pease was the Ravens coordinator with Terrell Suggs and Ray Lewis and all those guys. Mm-hmm. And he just a slight variation, and boom. It didn't stop Lamar because he accounted for 500 total yards, but it kept him from having those explosive game-breaking type of plays. So the league is, in fact, cyclical, and when you have a Rolodex like that to lean back on, it is very critical. Mm-hmm. Folks, this is, I said, we're going to go deep like sharks. This is what we did. We got more to come because we have two other candidates that we need to talk about as well. We'll be right back.
This is Cedric Gray, and I'm talking with TD.
So sound crazy right here.
Yeah. All right, back from the break, talking with TD, Nas, and AZ, bringing us back. TD and CB in the mix with my guy Connor making it happen, man. We just went deep on a couple candidates and Matt Nagy, Mike McDaniel, and Steve Spagnuolo. We're going to keep it going, and obviously, you know, as a guy who was on the offensive side of the ball when he played, I would like to talk offensive candidates, but I think you have to look at these two guys, and one is the obvious choice, and that's Robert Saleh. When I look at him, I think he's, and as you mentioned with Matt Nagy, got the raw deal. He got the raw deal too. Obviously, we know the Jets, they have a history of dysfunction, but I mean, let's look at this, right? He goes in, he's the coach. They go and get Aaron Rodgers, and hope springs eternal, and things that happen to the Jets happen to the Jets, and he popped his Achilles, and now you got a whole different degree of nonsense going on, and they could just never get on track. But I think when you look at Robert Saleh and you look at how he was before he went there to the Jets, that defense was outstanding.
Absolutely.
And we're talking about a defense, you know, Haofanga. You know what I mean? They had Bosa. They had, you know, at one point, Eric Armstrong and DeForest Buckner. Like, we're talking about Fred Warner. Mm-hmm. Azeez Alshire is a backup, a Pro Bowl linebacker is a backup. Dre Greenlaw, a lot of names. So you could say, hey, well, look, yeah, I would imagine he'll be a good coach because he did that with all these names. But then he goes back to San Francisco. Dre Greenlaw goes to Denver. Howell Fonga goes to Denver. Nick Bosa gets injured. Malik Mustafa, who was one of my favorite safeties a couple years ago. You know, just side note, I talked to him at the Senior Bowl, and I told him he reminded me of Bob Sanders, and he had the nerve to know who that was. I was like, because a lot of these guys, right. Like, they don't go back further than, you know, unless you're talking about Ed Reed or Sean Taylor or whatever, but
right,
yeah. He knew who that was. I thought that was dope, but he was hurt. Fred Warner hurt. This defense has held it together somehow, and a big part of that is Robert Saleh.
Absolutely. I think he's one of the best. You talk about leader of men presence. That's one of my top guys.
Yeah.
Like him in the locker room, his ability to connect with players. I mean, that's why he's one of the top candidates for me.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about his ability to connect with players. And last segment, we talked about how, you know, you're pretty much around the coaches on your side of the ball for the most part, the position yeah. coaches. Well, he and George Kittle are best friends. George Kittle goes to his office to hang out.
Right.
George Kittle's a tight end. He doesn't mm-hmm. play defense.
Yep.
You know, and I don't know if people really fully understand, like, the subtle degree of separation on both sides of the ball. You don't exactly. see the coaches, at least not going to the office
right.
like that. Yeah, they'll chop it up in practice, you know, before practice and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But you don't see that type of relationship. So I think that says a lot
for sure
for him to be. And I know George Kittle is everybody's best friend. You probably can't find a single person to say something negative about George Kittle. But still, that's a good example. There are other guys on offense that he connects to, but I think you said it, the leader of men aspect.
Exactly.
And Paul Kuharsky, he wrote after Mike Borgonzi's press conference, and he basically said, you know, the candidate that Borgonzi described that he wanted was pretty much what they fired. Robert Saleh, out of this whole group, is probably the most similar. Now, Mike Vrabel is just unique in of itself. But if there was one guy I could say, you know, he's cut from a similar cloth, it would be Robert Saleh.
Exactly. And we talked about earlier about experience and then a retreads. That's something that Robert Saleh intentionally tried to focus on, is getting better at connecting with players on the other side of the ball. Yes. So you see he's not stubborn. You see he's saw his mistakes, and he's actively and intentionally trying to get better at that. So
absolutely. And so when you look at him, right, obviously he's in the building with Kyle Shanahan. So, I mean, you take your pick of what's available there. But I'm going to tell you a guy that is starting to, and I always mess his name up, Nate Shieldhouse.
Yeah, that's how I'm going to go with it. Shieldhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a guy, and it's in, we talk about the cyclical nature of the league. So,
yeah,
Liam Cohen, who else? Zach Taylor. I think McDaniel did it. They were the guys in charge of drawing up the plays, right?
Yep.
McVay envisions it. Mm-hmm. He tells them they're
–
Shieldhouse is in charge of drawing up the plays.
Exactly.
And there's a degree, and you can relate to this, but there's a degree – and, folks, don't dismiss this, because I'm not saying if you didn't play a position, you don't know what you're talking about, because there are plenty of examples. But he played quarterback, and there's an ability to relate to the position. Now, of course, you know who he backed up at Illinois, right?
Who's that?
Juice Williams. Wow. Remember Juice Williams? Yeah. So he did play at Illinois, but then you also look at just coming through the ranks. You know, Dan Campbell, he coached for Dan Campbell at Iowa State.
Yeah, that's
right. You know, and he came through the ranks, and he was a guy that was viewed as a very hot name in the sport. And boom, McVay got him, and he's in that position. That's someone that Robert Saleh could have as his OC. Dave Ragone, in fact, he's getting some head coach interest.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And then you look at Dave Ragone, who, interesting thing with Dave Ragone, to tell you how small separation there is in the league, he was a QB coach for Matt Nagy in Chicago. So there's all these ties, but I think those are a couple guys that he could bring in as his OC. Let's say Mike McDaniel somehow doesn't get a job. Mm-hmm. Boom. But let me ask you this, though. If Robert Saleh and Mike McDaniel become a duo, like that would, it's really good. But how long do you think that would last? before McDaniel goes and gets a job somewhere else? And how do you prepare for that?
Exactly. That's the tough aspect about the business. When you get a good OC, they're going to be gone in a year or two, especially if the offense answers the bell. They're going to be gone. So it's going to be a revolving door. That's the challenge that you have with coaching structures like that. Because once you get that good OC, and you know it firsthand with Vrabel, once like with Art Smith, once he got his thing going, he was gone. Mm-hmm. LaFleur, right, first year, he got it going. I don't think his performance was that great as an OC first year, but he definitely had a good background that people wanted. And the Green Bay Packers have benefited from it.
Yeah, and down the stretch, when Derek, he went to see the Wizard. And he became Derrick Henry.
Thank goodness he went to see the Wizard.
Yeah, man, that's, ooh, thank goodness for sure, you know. But, yeah, so I look at that. I think you got to pick your pass game coordinator. That's what Shieldhouse has. But you got to pick that very wisely, your quarterback coach. And now with how they have this all set up, you could have a guy who's very impactful in the offense, but not calling the plays. But he's very impactful in run game coordinator, pass game coordinator.
Yep.
One other thing, though, to look at, because you mentioned Arthur Smith.
Mm-hmm.
He had a virtual interview, and people are dismissing that candidate because of, you know, what happened with the Steelers.
Right.
You look, he's had mediocre to subpar quarterback play his whole time since he left the Titans. Exactly. But let's not forget that play action. Well, first, the run-heavy offense. You know, and the thing I really liked about Arthur Smith was he had that FU, that jerk to him, right? Where it's like, you're down by 17. Okay, I'm still going to run the ball because I know what we got, and I'm going to stick to it. And then you look at, go back to 2019, the divisional game, right? Mm-hmm. They get the turnover. What does Art say? You know what? You swung and you missed. I'm ducking and I'm hitting you with a tiger uppercut, right? Yep. Play action, deep shot to Khalif Raymond, touchdown. Exactly. And that whole M&T Bank Stadium, everybody was like, you know, that's having the jerk in them. And then also, you know, people will say, hey, you know, he's not a valid candidate, this, that, and the third. Don't forget that offense, this last year here, they were second in yards and fourth in total points. Mm. Like fourth in scoring.
Yeah, I mean he went 7-10 with three straight years with no quarterback. Like, that's amazing to me. And then people want to talk about
Desmond Ridder? What?
It's crazy. And people want to talk about, like, you know, no disrespect, but not Clint Kubiak, but Kevin Stefanski, right?
Mm.
And I feel like offensive structure wise, there's not much different between the two. They're run heavy, a lot of tight ends, play action pass. Arts just didn't have the benefit of Myles Garrett and Jim Schwartz, you know, and a stacked offense and Baker Mayfield and an experienced quarterback like Joe Flacco. I think that Art just doesn't get a good, you know, he doesn't have good PR or marketing in terms of, you know, what he did. But you look, even this year with the Steelers, they are barren of wide receiver talent outside of DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
And they were still able to win the division. And obviously it wasn't a good showing. I mean, I tweeted and I called my shot against the Texans, but nobody has looked good versus the Texans.
Nobody.
So it's an unfair critique. He was able to get the most. I watched this team all year. As you know, I do my all 32 watching all team, all the most important plays. I watched what he was able to do with that roster, and he got the most out of what he could.
Yeah.
And as much as we love Aaron Rodgers, I went back and watched the Steelers game. It was not good. It was not good. All the money downs, and I have a tweet loaded up in my drafts. All the money downs, Art Smith did his job. I'll just leave it at that. Money downs, Art did his job, and everything else kind of failed the Steelers from there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that tweet. I want to see that. One other candidate, you know, I said defensive guys. I had to slip an offensive one in there. You know, Coach Art is my guy, so I had to get a little combo in there on him. But Vance Joseph, and I think, you know, you look at the ties, so Cliff Kingsbury is out with Washington. Vance Joseph was Kingsbury's D.C. and Arizona. So there's obviously a tie. You do run the risk of having him leave if the offense does well. Mm-hmm. But, man, air raid concepts with an air raid elite quarterback and Cam Ward would be a great match. But I want to talk about this defense. And this is no slight on Denard Wilson because, man, Denard was making chicken salad out of chicken, you know, that rhymes with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And week in and week out, I mean, we're talking about late October. You got three of the four DBs weren't even on the starters, weren't even on the roster in August. You know what I mean? So just I want to, you know, preface this with that. But Vance Joseph, Robert Saleh, you know, these are probably the best at the top in the league. And the thing that I love about Vance Joseph is the simulated pressure. And the way he'll make as a quarterback, he'll make your clock speed up, and he'll only send three, but you're still thinking like you're being blitzed.
Yep. Smart, right? Smart bullies. That's his slogan.
That's a very good phrase to use it. And it's just, you know, that I remember they used to call it amoeba, that amoeba front, where you got five guys standing up and they're all moving and you don't know who's coming, who's dropping, and it's just hell to a quarterback because sometimes he will send five, even six, you know, and just drop back in coverage with the rest. Other times he's sending three and dropping eight back, but you don't know what's happening. And so as a quarterback, you know, you got your predetermined, oh, hot, okay, boom, he's coming off here. I got the slant here. But guess what? You got a linebacker at the line of scrimmage showing blitz and then dropping back into that passing lane, interception. You know, and just the way that he does it, I think that is really good. And then just that creativity, the aggressive approach, that's perfect. Jeffrey Simmons, you know, you got to be able to make sure that you continue to maximize, you know, his turnaround. So I think when you look at Vance Joseph, also the ability to connect to players. There was a story, Connor Orr from MMQB. He did a story on Vance Joseph. And it talked about Marvin Lewis, where they were having trouble with a young, budding star at cornerback and an older veteran who was stuck in some bad ways. Mm-hmm. And you know where I'm going with this.
Yep.
Dre Kirkpatrick and Pac-Man Jones. Vance Joseph was the guy that was able to relate to both of them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And bring them both together. They both had really good years under Vance Joseph as their DB coach. So there you have the ability to relate to different personalities, different levels of player, rookie, young player, veteran. Exactly. But then also you look at the catalog to go back on, the retread, so to speak. Mm-hmm. He's been there and done that. We know this first stint in Denver didn't go well. He went back to Denver. Like, he was able to humble himself and go back to the place where he was a head coach. He went back as a coordinator.
Yeah.
Broncos defense is among the best in the league. Nobody's sacking the quarterback more. You know? And you look at, Bo Nix and Sean Payton, cool. But when you face the Broncos, you got to be worried about that defense.
Exactly.
Defensive player of the year. And remember, his specialty is the secondary, right? Defense. Patrick Surtain, the second corner to win that award in, what, the last 10 years or so. Gilmore, right? And then before that, I think it goes back to, it goes back pretty far. So I think when you look at that, there's a lot of expertise that goes into the defense. Exactly. This group that they got right now, they need all the help that they can get as far as the Titans are concerned.
Exactly. And you look at the candidates that are available, most of them are DC defensive backgrounds. And you look at the playoff teams outside, I mean, including the ones that got eliminated, you look at, there's a strong defensive presence. Mm-hmm. And you look at the teams that are Super Bowl winners, top 10 most common traits is points allowed from the defense, sacks, pressures. So it would behoove you to definitely do your research on the top tier defensive candidates in this coaching cycle.
Yeah. There it is right there. So, look, man, we want to go deeper, but we got Chris Sanders waiting. So we're going to go ahead and get Run TMC going. We'll be right back.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Run TMC. For you, fresh.
Here we go. As the music fades and the lights dim. And now, coming to you live from the Omni in Atlanta. Starting as shooting guard for your Atlanta Hawks. Out of the University of Rutgers. Number 10, Johnny Battle.
And now, the heavyweight boxing champion of the world.
Yo.
Leon Sphinx.
Who you call Leon Sphinx, me or CV?
Both of y'all.
Oh, all right, so he's Leon, I'm Michael.
No, no, that's Terrell Suggs, man. You Terrell Suggs.
Well, that's all right, because he said you look like Johnny Newman.
Oh, wow. You look like Greg Gumbel. That's what you look like.
All right, I'm done.
What's up, fellas? How y'all doing, man?
What's going on, man?
Man, I'm chilling, man. Just watching these crazy playoffs like Pittsburgh and, you know, the doggone Texans.
Wild card weekend, man. Was nuts.
Woo!
Nuts. You know what? Let's start there. Side note. What are your thoughts on A.J. Brown and the Eagles? You know, he had a – Devontae Smith had it's interesting how –
Yeah.
It's like the loudest – well, what they say, a closed mouth doesn't get fed.
Right.
But a closed book doesn't get read either, right? You know.
Yeah.
He's the louder of the two. Devontae Smith had a drop, too. That was critical.
Know,
third and 11. Let's talk about it. But everybody pushes that to the side, and they're all pointing at A.J. What are your thoughts on that situation over there in Philly?
I mean, it's wild because you got A.J. Brown, who's a great, great player, who's one of the, in my opinion, probably the top 15 receivers in the league. But you got to remember that when you're at the top of the echelon, people are going to nitpick everything that you do. If you walk in the building wrong, if you talk to somebody wrong, if you yell at the coach wrong, everything's going to be exploited. So I think if I'm A.J. Brown and I'm mentoring A.J. Brown, I would talk to him and say, okay, listen, I know you're an expressive guy. I know you get upset sometimes, but make sure you do it in a way that doesn't come off that you're being a selfish player. That's kind of how I would handle it. I'm not saying he's a selfish player, but everything you do is going to be scrutinized, so you just got to handle everything in the right way.
Yeah, and it's really crazy that it goes to show you how fickle this league could be, right? Because just last year, he's in the community making cheesesteaks.
And they're coming.
And this year, like, they're talking about getting the heck up out of here. What do you think of that, Charles? Ain't that crazy?
It's crazy, man. I mean, I think people are talking about, like, trading him already. First of all, his contract is – that's going to be an issue. I don't think he's going anywhere unless they rework it some way. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just the ups and downs of the league, man.
And you know what NFL stands for? Not for long. They'll love you one day and get you up out of here. And that's kind of what it is. And it's the nature of the beast that they'll love you one day. They'll be praise you and love you. But then all of a sudden you do one thing wrong, they're ready to get you up out of there.
Yeah, it's so crazy how that works. And you talk about being loved and then pushed out. Mike Tomlin, right? I mean.
Oh, my gosh.
A long tenure. And it was almost like, you know, he saw the writing on the wall. So he said, let me get up out of here. And he's gone. Yeah. But the way that relates to the Titans is Arthur Smith is now available as an OC candidate, if need be. But he, on Wednesday, he had a virtual with the Titans. What are your thoughts on Arthur Smith as a head coach?
I would love it. And the reason why I love it, especially coming to what the Tennessee Titans having right now, because we always talk about coaches developing players. Look at some of the players he developed. Tannehill, when he was basically at the end of his career, kind of get him back on track. And then also A.J. Brown. Just imagine, you know, Arthur Smith coming back, that he's been familiar with the Tennessee Titans. So I just think it would be a good plus, you know. So to get him in there, because why? He's been here before. He understands how it works. He's been in that building before. So I think it'll be a plus for the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Khalif Raymond. And you talk about a guy who's a leader, not afraid to correct somebody or have conflict. It's funny. So A.J. Brown's first camp, right?
Yeah.
A rookie mini camp. Mm-hmm. He ran an outbreaking route, and he slipped. And Arthur Smith was standing. So you know how, like, as a coach, you know, if you run a comeback, right? And right. you gotta go to 16, back to 14, and the coach would stand at 16. Well, that's what Arthur was doing. He was standing there, and AJ went to 16, boom, planted and slipped. Yeah. Arthur Smith cursed him out like, I mean, bad. And I was right there, and I recorded it. And I remember a week later, he told me, he's like, "You got me in trouble with my wife, man." She was like, "Why are you so mean to the players?" But I say all that to say, this guy's not afraid of conflict. He will correct somebody when the time is right.
Exactly.
Yeah, but see, the thing about it is he has a relationship with AJ Brown. If you don't have a relationship with your players, you just start cussing people out. I always say this term: rules without relationship equals rebellion, but rules with relationship equals a legacy. So here's what you have to do: is even though you're yelling at players, even though you're yelling at AJ Brown, even though you're screaming at him, the relationship was built before he even stepped on the field. So you know AJ Brown didn't take it personally. Yeah, he maybe got upset, but he understands that everything is predicated to paying attention to details, and you want somebody to keep you accountable in doing that situation.
No doubt about it. And Charles, you are very well versed in this franchise. Arthur Smith made it through four different coaching changes. What do you think that says about him?
I mean, it says that first of all, he knows how to operate and work through relationships. Like
there
what Chris
go.
Just tapped yep. into. Like he knows how to adapt. He knows how to work hard and set himself apart because he makes himself expendable. I mean, non-expendable. You cannot get rid of this guy because he's gonna learn everything, whether it's going to get free agents, getting coffee, getting donuts, or it's, you know, leading the top offenses in the NFL. He's shown the most organic growth of a coach that I've seen that's worked for this franchise.
Hey, go ahead.
And I think that he just has a high floor, like just pivoting off of what we talked about earlier with his work with the Steelers and then work with the Falcons. Like he's an offensive coordinator, but he's always coaching from the defensive because he's at a disadvantage because of the talent that he has. You look at him when he has talent and look at him what he's been able to do without talent. He still has a high floor.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then you also have to look at the leadership aspect. I remember, I don't know why, but for some reason, during a practice, this was during camp, Mike Vrabel turned to Matt LaFleur and he just said, "Man, shut the F up." And LaFleur was just like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, I turned and looked at Buck Rising, and Buck looked at me and I was like, oh, right? Now,
yeah.
I've seen Vrabel and Arthur Smith go back and forth, and Arthur Smith wasn't having it. Mm-hmm.
Right,
and I say all that to say also, as a tight end coach, there were times where Arthur Smith was getting in front of the offense, presenting to the offense, right? As a tight end coach. Not LaFleur, Arthur Smith was presenting. Yeah. I think that says a lot. And to me, we earlier said that Robert Saleh is probably the closest to Mike Vrabel just because they're both defensive. In my opinion, Arthur Smith is like an offensive version of Mike Vrabel.
But you know what is? What is Bergonzi looking for? He said this. He said he wants a guy with a clear vision. Number two, he said he wants to hold players accountable.
Mm.
And that's what you want. If I got to go 16 yards, then I need to go 16 yards. If I need to, you know, play cover two and stay on my half, then I need to stay on my half. So it's not just about running around screaming at people. It's about holding guys accountable of paying attention to details. If I expect you to be at the meeting, if I expect you to do what you need to do, then that's what I want you to do. And if I have to yell at you, curse at you, kick you, yell, scream, then I'm going to do that. But at the end of the day, you have to have a relationship with your players. And if you have a relationship with your players, they're not going to get sensitive like Ralph Tresvant and get upset.
Sensitivity. Yeah. Are there any other candidates out there that you're interested in for this team?
I like Matt Nagy, and I like him. He's fiery. I mean, he keeps players accountable. And here's what I love about him is you get a chance to exploit Cam Ward's, you know, specialty and his skill set. What does he like to do? He loves motions. He likes RPO, and he loves play action. So what does Cam do well? He does RPOs, and he does play action well. The reason why I love him is because he's going to use Cam Ward's ability and make him be better. Why? Because the offense suits Cam Ward.
I'm going to present this question to both of you. Charles, sure. You go first. he was a big part of the development of Patrick Mahomes. Obviously, he mm-hmm. left and then came back, and you know, Mahomes became the best quarterback ever. Do you think that that has cachet just because of the quote-unquote similarities between Mahomes and Cam Ward's styles of play?
Absolutely. Even just from a personality perspective, right? They're both, just looking at both quarterbacks, super competitive. Let's start from the mental. Super competitive. Love to force the ball, push the ball downfield. Good leaders, natural leaders, right? And that's something that Matt Nagy, if you go and do your research on the development of Patrick Mahomes, is just letting him be him. You know, so yeah. I think just from the head up, I mean the shoulders up, you're going to have that checked off in congruence with each other. Then when you talk about just the success structurally in within the offense, we talked about the Eric Coryell earlier, pushing the ball downfield, stretching the ball downfield. You're going to appease to Cam Ward in that sense. So I think it has cachet 100% because there's so many similarities between the two.
Okay, Tyrone. Come on, Tyrone Hill.
Nah, he said it, man. I mean, it's about creating an environment and creating an offense that suits the face of your franchise. Who's the face of your franchise? That's Cam Ward. So if he feels comfortable, the offensive line is going to feel comfortable, the receivers are going to feel comfortable, the coaching staff is going to feel comfortable, the defense is going to feel comfortable. Why? Because you're structuring around your leader. And if you do that and he gets better and better and gets more experience and understand what's going on, he's going to be a force to reckon with. Why? Because you structured your offense around him.
Now, we can't go this whole time without talking about John Harbaugh. We're going to talk about Canada.
Yeah, I know.
And let me ask you this.
Sure.
What does just being able to say the Giants, Titans, and Falcons out of the eight jobs, that include the Steelers,
uh-huh.
obviously late in the game, but out of the nine jobs, those three, the Titans are one of the three finalists for John Harbaugh.
Wow.
What does that say about this franchise?
I'm going to let you answer that first.
Times have changed. The times have changed. Let's put it like that.
Right.
You know, we've heard reports, and obviously John Harbaugh deserves the contract. But I remember some times where the Titans might not have ponied up that amount. So the fact that they're in the running, that's impressive to me. Obviously, he's a storied head coach in this league, and one of the best. The best CEO available, CEO style head coach available in the cycle.
Yeah.
Titans fans should be excited that the Titans are even trying to pull this off.
And to piggyback off what he's saying, there's also so many things that come with it. You got a young quarterback that's starting to play well, and then you got a situation to where you're moving in a new stadium. So that might be appeasing to a head coach to be like, okay, you know what, even though you know, the Titans are at the bottom, I get a chance to rebuild them to the top with a new stadium, new attitude, new quarterback, just bringing some newness to this team that this, you know, this franchise needs.
Yeah, and what we'll do, we'll go around the table, and the answers could be the same. But I think a good transition from that is to what is so appealing about this franchise. And Charles, you said it earlier, it's a canvas. You have $100 million-plus in cap space.
Oh,
you got a young quarterback.
Yep.
You got what has now become one of the best defensive players in the league. Yeah, the roster's barren, but there's a lot of shaping that could happen with it. What are your observations on that?
You have a QB1. You have a QB1 that's a leader that's gonna raise the floor of the offense. On defense, you have what would be a DPOY candidate if the Titans won some games last year.
Mm-hmm.
You have the cap space. You have the Shout out Nashville, the area. It's a growing city. You have the ability, like I said, blank canvas to build whatever team you want. Do you want to run first? Do you want a play action team? Do you want an aggressive defensive style team? You can just literally, you can definitely put your DNA on this team. And I think that's what's appealing to Nashville. And plus, the bonus is, by all accounts, watching him speak, listening to what he's done, Mike Borgonzi is a football guy, football mm-hmm. mind. So you can definitely bet on that.
Go ahead and wrap it up, Chris.
No, did you hear what he said? He said something that was so profound, man. He said, put your DNA on this team. If we look at this team right now, what's the DNA of this team? We don't know. So you get a guy in here that's just a CEO that's going to keep guys accountable, but also be a player's coach that's going to respect the players and bring some players in here to want to come and play, to want to come and win a championship, to want to get into the new stadium. So when you have a guy like that that brings an energy and an attitude of wanting to win and try to smash somebody, hit somebody in the mouth, that's the direction that you need for the Tennessee Titans, man.
I don't think there's much more that could be said about this coaching search than what we've done.
that's a great
conversation. They'll continue to work through, again, 17 candidates.
Wow.
That's what you call casting a wide net. And I don't think, you know, it's indecisiveness. I think it's a whole lot of information gathering, as well as just making sure, listen, we want to look at, and when I say we, I'm talking about if I were the Titans, we. You know, let me just correct it. They want to look at all avenues possible, and I respect that. And not making a hasty decision, they're carrying it out. Who knows? It may not be done by the Senior Bowl. If it's not, so be it. But we'll see. And obviously, it's going to last a little bit longer because you have teams who are in the conference, you know, going to progress to the conference championship with candidates, et cetera, et cetera. So. We'll continue to stay tuned to this. Chris, appreciate you. Charles, appreciate you. Connor, appreciate you as well. Definitely continue to check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, everywhere you get your fine listen materials. Search Talking with TD, subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.